came in by the dozens, walking or crawling. Some were bright-eyed, some were dead on their feet. And they came from Zimbabwe, or from Soviet Georgia, East St. Louis, or from Paris, or they lived across the street. But they came, and when they'd finally made it here, it was the least that we could do to make our welcome clear. Come on in. We haven't slept for weeks. Drink some of this. This'll put color in your cheeks.
It's 2 o'clock on Sunday, and you are listening to WUVT FM 90.7 Blacksburg. You just heard Color in Your Cheeks by the Mountain Goats. Before that was Fake Plastic Trees by Radiohead. And before that was Are You Mine by Arctic Monkeys. This next song is called Heroin by the Velvet Underground.
That I'd sail the darkened seas on a ship going from this land here to that on a sailor's suit and cap. My life, because a mana to my vein leads to a center in my head, and then I'm better off than dead. Thank you. with him, long sister.
You just heard Whole Love by Wilco. Before that was The Old Days by Dr. Dog. Up next is Youthless by Beck. The 27th annual Take Back the Night rally in March will be held on Wednesday, March 30th at 7 p.m. at the outdoor stage on Henderson Lawn at Virginia Tech. All are welcome to join in the protest against violence against women and promote awareness of attitudes and behaviors that perpetuate violence. For more information, you can visit facebook.com/womenspacevt.
There's a bottomless pit that we've been climbing from. It's just a kid on level ground. Shake your seasick legs around. If we're in a local town, signs of life will stop and flickering. Need a bed to lay my body down. Then with the carry down, some static is lulling me to sleep. Hang your clothes on a chain link fence. And junk God say I'm in a mouth is full of worthless sounds. And burning sentences. There's a trademark so bereaved. Tied my leg to a barricade with the plastic hanging net. They tried to turn emotion into noise. The teleprompter for my life. Need a pipeline to the night. My body can't get no relief. Endless life, it goes by fast. You treading water in the past. And forgetting in the background, saying nothing.
Go for a ride, but hey, you turn me right on. Let's get on the bike. Moving the past.
Hey, Barbie, want to go for a ride?
Yeah, what's up? Like, what's that?
That's the new Woof.
Oh, it's huge.
Satan's Jimmy.
What does it do?
All sorts of things. It's a new magazine from WUVT featuring music and...
You are listening to the Sports Roundup on WUVT. I'm Brady Hess alongside of...
Josh Henry.
Andrew Alex.
Matthew Atkins.
And Zach Bakulik.
And we are going to ramble on about sports for about 45 minutes here today. Glad you could tune in. Going to start off in Hokie sports today. The men's basketball team got a big win against Clemson yesterday. What did you guys think about the Hokies being able to get that win and snapping a five-game losing streak?
Well, I thought it was great that the Hokies could get back in the win column in such a, obviously a difficult ACC. They've been having a little bit of trouble recently in some close games, with of course the Syracuse game being a heartbreaker and the Pitt game being not exactly as competitive as some Hokie fans would have hoped it to be. But Clemson's a very good team. Clemson beat Duke, I believe, earlier in the season. They've had their impressive wins, and you know, poor Clemson, this is more of a detrimental loss to them in their hopes of making the tournament than this would help the Hokies. But you know, it's all about just building this team, building this program for Buzz Williams, and a team that only won two regular season ACC games last year, obviously showing big signs of improvement last year and being able to hold on in the end when the going was tough against Clemson at a very packed Castle Coliseum. I was very impressed with how the Hokies played last night.
I mean, after losing like five straight games, was it? And then beating Clemson, that's going to be a real morale booster. I mean, all those games that they lost were really close, and they should have won most of them, honestly.
I'll tell you what, I like the game versus Clemson yesterday. The Hokies have been blocked 119 times this entire season. Although that seems pretty poor and not the stat you would want, it means the Hokies are taking the ball to the hoop. We're no longer relying on Adam Smith or Jarrell Eddie to chuck up shots or Eric Green chuck up shots and hope they go in. Taking the ball to the hoop, dishing it out to Seth Allen, Justin Bibbs. Why do you think Justin Bibbs is shooting so well, shooting about 50% from beyond the arc? So definitely things you want to see with Buzz Williams' team going forward from here.
Definitely a big win yesterday in Castle. It was probably one of the tougher things I had to do leaving at halftime of that yesterday. But yeah, I know.
Crushed.
It was. It was awful. It was. It really was awful. But they did get in the win column yesterday, and they go on the road to take on a ninth-ranked UVA team on Tuesday. Virginia, I think they – did they win yesterday? I think they won. But you know there's going to be some bad blood in that one after the Hokies defeated what was then the fourth-ranked Wahoos in Charlotte, or in Blacksburg back in January. Something to touch base on really quick. The lacrosse team defeated Gardner Webb today at Gardner Webb 18-1. Men's tennis is at Ohio State today. Women's basketball is at UVA. That game, there's 3 minutes 49 seconds left in the second quarter. Virginia Tech up 25-20 on the Hoos. And wrestling is at Edinburgh. Matt, could you tell us a little bit about how the wrestling team is doing in Edinburgh today?
Yeah, Zach Savatsky won the 184-pound match 3-1 over the number 2 wrestler in the country to put the Hokies in the lead 19-7. They're currently in the heavyweight match, and Ty Walls is leading 4-3 going into the final period, and they started at 133 today, so Joey Dance at 125 will be the last match of today.
So sounds like the Hokies are doing well there. Moving on from Tech sports, National Signing Day was this week in college football, and that, I guess we could connect that to Virginia Tech sports. Did anything jump out at you guys on Signing Day on Tuesday?
The one observation I had was that it seems like Justin Fuente is bringing in a lot of guys from all over the place. You look at when they were posting as the signings were happening one by one. We're getting a lot of guys from Florida, a lot of guys from Georgia. I think we got a 4-star guy from the state of Michigan, which I thought was a big steal. So I think when you look at the marketing media campaigns that Fuente's putting out there right now, he's kind of trying to argue that Virginia Tech, despite not being in the SEC, is still really a football school, a football town, and as he called it, the epicenter of the college football universe. And if he can recruit well enough, maybe there could be some legitimate arguments for that to be true coming up soon. But it looks like a pretty good first class for Justin Fuente, you know, because, you know, sometimes in a coaching change situation, that cannot be – not be good for the immediately after recruiting class, but it seems like Justin Fuente held strong and Tech's future is looking bright.
I like seeing the two quarterbacks, Joshua Jackson and Gerard Evans, come in. We're going to have a really interesting quarterback battle next season, especially when you include Dwayne Lawson and then Brendan Motley also. Those four quarterbacks, it's going to be good to see in the spring game.
Yeah, I was actually going off on Andrew's point here. I'm going to take it another way and say I was a little disappointed with the recruiting. We are 7th in ACC recruiting right now. We got jumped by UNC and Pitt from last year. However, that's nothing to be scared of. We stole Sam Denmark from South Carolina, got Devon Diablo. Two big receiver weapons that will help out Isaiah Ford next year. You know, give or take, you look at Rivals, you look at ESPN, you look at 247 Sports, we're ranked from 40-something to 56 is the worst rating we have. You know, at the end of the day, Justin Fuente, he had a hard job to do. He got his offensive guys that he wanted. Like Andrew said, he recruited down south. He recruited out there in the Midwest, too. And we actually stole more kids from UVA in the Virginia area. So that's something to be proud of.
Well, I had to add on to that point. I would temper expectations just for at least this year as the start, simply because it is Fuente's first year as head coach. We seem to be having some technical difficulties. But it's Fuente's first year as head coach. He's not going to come out with a splash recruiting class like a guy like Harbaugh in Michigan. That's a tall task right there. But at the same time, you get some guys from here and there. You show that you can recruit all over the country. And I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say bold prediction. With a name like Devon Diablo, that guy's going to be a stud.
I mean, we can remember, stealing people sometimes ends up working out in your favor. If you remember, we stole Isaiah Ford from Louisville on, the last day. And that ended up working out pretty well in the Hokies' favor. Like, guy ended up pretty much being the entire team. So, hopefully big moves like that can end up with wins in the win column in the future.
And, I mean, you have to think, too, I mean, he's been on the job since December, November.
A month and a half, really.
A month and a half. And I think he come in, and considering he only had 2 months, give or take, to hit the recruiting trail pretty hard, I think that Gerard Evans, that was a big splash in the recruiting waves. But I think the future could be bright. He's looking in the right places, and I really would like to see the state of Virginia won back over by the Hokies, because you remember when the 757 was when the Hokies were in the 757, they were winning games. They pulled Michael Vick out of there, D'Angelo Hall, Cam Chancellor, numerous other guys. Could handpick the studs that come out of that place.
Yeah, and of course you gotta also think, maybe we are a number 40 recruiting class right now, but it doesn't necessarily translate directly into wins. 4-star recruits don't always end up being the best players. Cam Chancellor was like a 2-star recruit at the time, but the way that this DBU program coached him up, now he's a guy that's one of the biggest studs in the National Football League. Like, it comes a lot down to coaching, and I think Fuente, despite the fact that he had short time to work with in recruiting this class, is the kind of guy that can coach these guys up. I think he's got the right staff. I'm not really concerned about anything bad happening out of maybe the recruiting rankings dropping a little bit from mid-20s to mid-30s from a year-to-year basis.
Speaking of staff, and I can't believe I didn't put this on the spreadsheet, but Torian Gray bolted from Virginia Tech to go to Florida as the defensive backs coach at Florida. So the Hokies are in need of a defensive backs coach as of National Signing Day.
Wow.
So that is – it was a surprise, and what – what timing to you got to wonder how those DB recruits feel on National Signing Day. One last thing to note with the National Signing Day buzz is Rashawn Gary, the number one recruit in the country, committed to Michigan. And why would you not want to commit to Michigan? Harbaugh brought in on signing day to Michigan a list of celebrities, pretty much. Just to name a couple, Tom Brady was there.
Derek Jeter was there.
Jim Leland, my personal favorite, Ric Flair was there. Mike Shanahan, Desmond Howard. I mean, Harbaugh's not playing around. I mean, Michigan, I'm going to go out on a limb and say Michigan wins the national title in the next 5 years.
Oh, all right. Now, if you're Virginia Tech, let's say Justin Fuente wants to do that, what celebrities are we bringing in?
Michael Vick.
Michael Vick,
Tyrod Taylor,
Bruce Smith,
David Wright is a Virginia Tech fan. We could bring in David Wright.
David Wright, yeah. We could bring in Marty Smith off of ESPN. Yeah. Maybe he could bring in his buddy Eric Church. I don't really know. But going to the NFL.
Happy unofficial national holiday. It's Super Bowl Sunday, everybody.
Super Bowl Sunday, like Josh mentioned, national holiday. Everybody go out and get the booze, get some food. It's going to be a fun day of football, possibly. Possibly the last hurrah for the sheriff. I didn't know they called him that until they've been everybody on Facebook the past 2 weeks, like, oh, let's see how the sheriff rides off into the sunset.
Well, it was a John Gruden staple for the last, at least 2 years. I think ever since he went to Denver, Gruden's been calling him that. But now recently, it's kind of, picked up. More and more people are starting to call him that. I know, Ron Jaworski, when Peyton came back against San Diego, he was like, the sheriff's back in town. It's like, this is – I love this unbiased reporting.
Yeah, I don't know. What's your opinions of the game? Who do you guys think is going to come out on top?
No doubt, Panthers all the way. To me, there's no possible way the Broncos can win this game. I mean, they have the best defense in the league. but the Panthers' offense is just too much for them. And the Panthers' defense is pretty good also. Josh Norman and Luke Kuechly, they're going to win this, no doubt.
I don't know. I think the most important thing comes down to a man named Jonathan Stewart. You know, he's not the guy who has the breakaway speed, but, you know, he sets that option up for Cam Newton. If he can't get anything going in the run game, I am nervous for Cam Newton because guys like Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware are going to be hunting him down all game. So we'll see.
I think you make a very excellent point there, and I think we should break the game down as much as we can because, again, it's the Super Bowl, people. We got to talk about it. I think this is clearly a very underrated defensive matchup. I know 538, the ESPN, like it's like their off-branch statistics website. They said it's one of the best defensive matchups in Super Bowl history, like ever. I think that's what makes this so interesting, because if you look at it from an offensive standpoint, which is what everyone wants to do, because it's Peyton Manning's last ride. Cam Newton just won the MVP. They're this hot and cocky Panthers team that they've been scoring points on everybody the last few weeks. Remember they put up 31 on Seattle in one half.
Oh yeah,
30 plus every game.
And then they put 49 on Arizona 2 weeks ago.
It's been the greatest show on turf, honestly. Like it's so much fun to watch when the Panthers are on. Everyone's tuning in, and like you said that Jonathan Stewart opens up the passing game for Cam Newton. Cam Newton also opens up the passing game for Cam Newton.
he does a really great job, and that's one of the more interesting matchups is, okay, so you look at it 2 weeks ago, Brady, I'm sorry, I have to bring this up again. In the Denver-New England game, Tom Brady's getting killed out there by Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, and all the other pass rushers for Denver, but it also has something to do with not only the fact was his offensive line so bad, but also that Brady, not a mobile quarterback by any means. Cam Newton, on the other hand, is probably either the most mobile or second most, depending on how you feel about Russell Wilson, quarterback in the NFL. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic, is not only is the Panthers' offensive line probably a little bit more prepared based on how they've played this season, but also the fact that Cam Newton can create space for himself if necessary.
The 27th annual Take Back the Night Rally in March will be held on Wednesday, March 30th at 7 p.m. at the outdoor stage on Henderson Lawn at Virginia Tech. All are welcome to join in the protest against violence against women and promote awareness of attitudes and behavior that perpetuate violence. For more information, you can visit facebook.com/womanspacevt.
One thing that I find really interesting about this game is it really reminds me of the game 2 years ago between the Seahawks and the Broncos. I mean, the Panthers are so young. The most experienced player on the team is Thomas Davis. And so they've got such a young team. Well, yeah.
Oh, he's playing. I don't know if he's going to be playing with two arms or one. But
forearm, yeah. That was a great line.
But they got such a young team against this really experienced Broncos team. And it really reminds me of that game 2 years ago. But I hope it's not like that game 2 years ago where we're getting blown out. That was just an awful game to watch.
It's a scary prospect to think about. And I like your point there, how it reminds you. And there are a ton of similarities. I think the biggest difference is actually how Denver's coming into this game. Because 2 years ago, they were the best offense in the NFL. Peyton Manning quietly, very, very quietly, it was kind of odd, broke the touchdown record for a single season like it was no big deal. And everybody thought it was like, okay, this is an offense versus defense matchup. And then Russell Wilson and the Seahawks offense went and put a smackdown on that Denver defense, couldn't stop a nosebleed, even though who was he throwing to in that Super Bowl? Was Doug Baldwin still his best receiver then?
I think it was. Yeah.
Sidney Rice was gone.
Well, yeah. Did Percy Harvin play?
Yeah, I think so.
Percy Harvin played in that one.
He had the kickoff return.
Retired Percy Harvin now.
Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic because if you look at this Panthers offense, you can see a ton of similarities. I think the Panthers' number one receiver is better than anything Seattle had in that Super Bowl because Greg Olsen, arguably the second-best tight end in the NFL behind the one and only Rob Gronkowski, another Patriots shout-out for Brady has here. he's slowly hurting over here. Just like, stop talking about the Patriots. But at the same time, if you look at the wide receivers on the Panthers' side, that's kind of like, where do you want to put your money on them? Do you like them in this game, or do you hate them in this game? I personally think it's a terrible matchup. I think that's the one bad matchup for the Panthers in this game.
Just imagine how dominant their offense would be if they had Kevin Benjamin this year.
Oh, you know, I'm looking right now, and I just was curious. I searched up the Vegas preseason odds for winning the Super Bowl. We have the Panthers at 60-1 odds. That's number 23 overall in the NFL. Ahead of them, the Bills, the New York Giants, St. Louis Rams, the dismal San Diego Chargers. We're at 40-1 odds. The Lions, the Dolphins, the Cowboys, the Steelers, the Philadelphia Eagles were 8-1 odds. No one saw this coming. The moment Kelvin Benjamin went out preseason, people were writing the Panthers, who last year went 7-8-1 overall. They won the NFC South in one of those almost similar to my Washington Redskins this year.
Shouldn't have made the playoffs,
but you know, here they are. And just kind of like we saw a couple of years ago when the Seahawks were that team that shouldn't make the playoffs but were on the rise, ended up winning the Super Bowl one or two years later. Here are the Panthers. And like I said, the greatest show on turf. It's like a reality show with these guys. And Cam Newton is the man that either America loves or America loves to hate. Like, and this is his time to shine. He's emerging as probably the most popular player in the NFL right now.
You are totally right. And at the same time, just to go off that, you said the preseason poll, they were 23rd. They were 23rd in ranking. Well, think about this. The whole season, did anyone believe in the Carolina Panthers? Even when they were undefeated, even they were beating teams down at the end of the season, did you really believe?
Yeah, exactly. I remember what people were like, and I was a hater too. I remember saying when the Panthers were undefeated, it was like, well, they were trailing every game in the fourth quarter when they were like 6-0 or something like that, and no one believed in them, and here they are. You know, one lost team dominating their opponents. And, I mean, I don't think there's a person at this table that thinks that the Broncos are really going to win. Like, do you, even anyone here think the Broncos are going to win?
Not realistically.
I think the Panthers are going to win, but I think maybe more than one of us at this table would like to see the Broncos beat the Panthers.
And I think it's the guy in the Atlanta Falcons hat.
Yeah, really. I meant to jump on a little bit earlier. Yeah, a little upset the Panthers are in this – in the Super Bowl in the first place. But I don't know. I mean, you know, we get a close game going to the fourth quarter. You got the Sheriff, Peyton Manning. Sheriff. You know, you don't know. He's throwing to arguably better receivers than, definitely better than the Carolina Panthers and Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. It's a special game for Demaryius Thomas and his mom.
Yeah, his mom's going to be there, right?
Yeah, you just never know how it's gonna play out. Both teams want it very, very bad, so.
I just want to know how many Panthers fans know that Derek Anderson is the backup quarterback for the Panthers. That's what I want to know.
Are you suggesting that they may try to hurt Cam Newton in this game? Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is I want to know how many people have been Panthers fans for longer than 4 months.
Yeah, just walking through West End this morning, a lot of people in Cam Newton jerseys. I'm like, I guess you all had a really good Christmas 2015 because those are all new right there.
There are a lot of out-of-state students here now.
All of a sudden,
I didn't realize how many of you are from Charlotte, North Carolina until now.
Another pretty crazy stat that just popped up on my Facebook feed is Peyton Manning has 701 rushing yards in his career. Cam Newton has 686 rushing yards this season alone. So there's your giggle for the day.
Well, that's kind of another example of how the Panthers' defense, again, has an advantage because they're so quick. This is an extremely athletic team. And you saw how they beat up on Carson Palmer 2 weeks ago. He had the full DeLome with the four picks and two fumbles or whatever the stat was.
Should have been six.
There you go. And I think that's something, like, everybody wants to write up on the narrative of, like, this is Peyton Manning's last ride. What's he going to do? It could be amazing.
The man can't feel his fingers.
Has anyone watched how he's played? Not only, like, last week, but the whole season. He's the first quarterback since 1986 to be in the Super Bowl with more picks than touchdowns. In 86, it was Phil Simms. And if I recall correctly, the Giants won that game, but at the same time, like, even 2 weeks ago, Peyton Manning, he had one drive. He had the 83-yard drive to start the game where even I was like, whoa, he's back. Like, he looks pretty good. He had some good throws. Owen Daniels beat Collins over the middle for a beautiful touchdown pass. And then for the rest of the game, it was like, okay, he can't feel his fingers again. He's out. He's done. just throwing ducks the whole game. I don't see how Carolina can't stop that.
So are you insinuating that he's more of a Papa John's owner than a quarterback now? Like, I mean, you said you have a pretty dismal outlook on this guy. Why don't we throw Brock Osweiler back in there?
I'm just trying to be honest, and that's actually one of the interesting Vegas odds. They do prop bets for the Super Bowl where it's just like little things in the game, like what are the chances of this happening? One of them is, does Brock Osweiler see field time in this game? Like, say, the first half, like if Carolina all of a sudden just puts a beat down on them, say there's a turnover in the first two drives for Denver, and it just gets out of hand, do they put the hook on Peyton Manning?
You know, I'm glad you brought up Brock Osweiler, because Peyton Manning, he played in the playoffs, and he's going to play tonight in the Super Bowl, but you cannot give him all the credit for the Broncos season this year. Brock Osweiler really kind of saved their season halfway through. I mean,
Brock Nation, baby. I was way team Brock. I was surprised that they put Manning back in. I mean, what was it? Just one bad half that Brock Osweiler had before they pulled the plug, and Peyton Manning for that one particular game just happened to look like Superman or something like that.
Well, you know what's actually interesting about that game, the one against San Diego, is they pulled Osweiler and then they ran the ball, I think it was like 22 times from then on out. Yeah. I think Peyton threw like 10 passes in that game. He had 128 yards. He threw a pick, and they won by, I think it was like 3 or 6 points against the Chargers.
The worst, like, team in the AFC.
The second worst team in the NFL.
Yeah, no, I forgot the Browns. Don't even think about the Browns. The Browns aren't a football team.
Yeah, oh, my gosh.
I didn't realize until you mentioned that Peyton had more interceptions than touchdowns, and that doesn't surprise me, but I thought that the margin would be a little bit closer.
It's pretty big. It's almost double.
It's 9 touchdowns to 17 interceptions. And who would have ever thought that Peyton Manning wouldn't have thrown for 10 touchdowns in a season yet?
I mean, 10. Who would have thought he would throw less than 30 if we were talking about 2 years ago? Like, it is incredible. I don't want to say, like, downfall, but I guess that's an appropriate term. That even just from last season to this one, what has happened to Peyton Manning, one of the greatest to ever play football?
I mean, but it's also kind of part of the storyline. You got two number one overall draft picks, both quarterbacks, facing off against each other. One represents, you know, kind of the first decade of the 21st century and that string of dominance he had. And then Cam Newton, drafted in, I believe, 2010, kind of represents the second decade of the 21st century. And it's kind of like, out with the old, you can go own Papa John's now, in with the new. If this game plays out as, you know, Cam Newton, if he wins the Super Bowl, he's undoubtedly going to be the face of the NFL. No disrespect to your boy Tom Brady. But, I mean, this year really has been, and the big overriding storyline of the season is Cam Newton's coming out party as, you know, the most dominant player in the NFL.
And I hate to admit it, because I am one of the Cam haters. And I'm sure I'll change my mind by next season. This is exactly how I was with Steph Curry, too, who also is a Carolina Panthers fan. But it's a fact. He won the MVP last night for a reason. This dude has played out of his mind for a team that, again, nobody believed in them, and they lost one game, and now they're, I think, what does anyone know the point spread right now? Last time I checked, it was a 7.5 point spread.
Right now it's at 5, according to ESPN.
I read a lot of people are putting big money on the Broncos, which I have no idea why, but I guess I could try to explain that scenario soon. But it's so interesting how this game, just from an outside point of view, it doesn't look like it's going to be that close, depending on the situation, I guess.
Yeah, but, you know, that's why we play the game on the field, though. That's the thing. I do think the Panthers are a much better football team, just in the way that the Panthers have dominated people. But at the end of the day, that's why we play the game. And the Broncos defense, say whatever you will about Peyton Manning and, you know, how he's a shell of what he used to be, but the Broncos defense is still very good. And, you know, in between the hash marks, anything can happen, so...
Do you all believe that this is the last game we ever see Peyton Manning step on the football field?
Of course.
It definitely should be.
It should be. If he loses, you never know. People are crazy.
You were speaking of prop bets. Prop bets that Peyton Manning is at the Battle of Bristol next September. So there's your one.
Now, here's something, like, speaking of retirement, just to go off topic a little bit. What do you guys think of Marshawn Lynch announced that he's retiring today? Calvin Johnson early in the week. Is this going to be a pattern that we see, that these guys, having heard this information of the long-term, you know, dangers of football injuries, are we going to start seeing guys taking the money and running after less years in the NFL than, you know, you previously would expect it, or maybe that their bodies could theoretically hold up because of this.
Well, Calvin Johnson, I mean, I'm surprised by that one. But Marshawn Lynch, he's 29. And for a running back, they get beat up 29? So much. Yeah, he's 29.
Really? I thought he was in his 30s.
No.
Oh, wow.
You know, running backs, they get beat up so much. That seems like a good age to retire, especially for all that he's accomplished.
I mean, I agree with that, that he could retire. But it's not like we saw that much. I mean, he got hurt this year. I mean, he was the best. The number one thing that we were talking about a year ago today was why you wouldn't put the ball in the hands of Beast Mode, the man who can get it done on the 1 yard line. And now 1 year later, we're saying that he's not going to strap up a football helmet again. I feel like he has more in him. But like you said, he has accomplished so much. I'm sure he has the money to do whatever he wants. I mean, he could own Skittles for the rest of his life or something like that.
I just read something today that said he hasn't touched his salary money at all. He's just been living off endorsements his whole career.
Hey, Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah. Did you guys see the video of Lynch in like an airport or somewhere with the girl and somebody else? Marshawn, are you coming back next year? And then he just was like, "Is your coming back next year?" I was like, "Oh, well." And he just grins and he's got the girl on his arm. I'm like, "Oh, this is